Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namasami. First, I'd like to ask permission from Ajahn Sanyamo and Ajahn Jyotipalo to offer some Dhamma reflection for tonight. And like I said, we're visiting for a couple of weeks. Mostly, the reason for the visit is actually to be with my parents. My father was undergone a surgery because of his having a stroke. We weren't quite sure whether he'll make it, so that's the reason for the visit. But also, over the years, every time I come back to LA to visit my parents, I've always made an effort to come up here to visit Bayagiri, just to get a sense of connection and getting to know the local Sangha. Yeah, it's great to see the monastery developing over the years. And yeah, I just want to express my mudita, appreciation, rejoicing in the fact that things are going very well at Bayagiri. So the Sangha is growing, practicing in peace and harmony. Yeah, sometimes we take it for granted. It's actually a very rare thing. As another monk was saying, that Ajahn Pasno has done an incredible job, you know, to turn obnoxious young Americans into very nice, thoughtful monks. It's not an easy job, actually. As you look around to the wider society, we tend to be, by and large, a bit self-focused. But you know, to see a sangha working together in peace and harmony, you know, it's great. You know, to highlight the fact, because in the practice of the Dhamma, you know, it's good to get the foundation right, and the foundation is always on sila, which is the precept, but it's, you know, the larger, fuller than that, is the, on based on kindness, on you know, kind of our everyday interactions with each other, whether we act in out of kindness and generosity, or acting out of greed and aversion. And unless we get that correct, it's hard to go deeper into the practice. But now that, but once we do get the practice of restraint, practice of kindness on a body level, it's good to take that and to go a bit deeper, practice of stillness, practice of samadhi, of training the mind. Obviously, many different ways to train the mind, many different ways to still the mind. And I thought tonight, you know, say a little thing, you know, some of the ways, the means that I found to be helpful for myself. Just quoting from Lumpur Sumedho, it is, it's the practice, you know, of samadhi, but also the practice of the Dhamma. First, you know, foremost and above all, it's not about getting things. Although, you know, we come to the monastery, come to the Dhamma, because we want peace. We want to lessen our suffering. And while that is good and is a wholesome intention, but the practice of Dhamma is about getting to know who we are and what we are, getting to be present. So it's not really about getting anything or about getting rid of anything. It's about understanding what's happening. So knowing clearly what's happening. And once we know clearly, I think that the craving or defilements fade away on their own. But sometimes not so easy for most of us growing up in the West, that there's this kind of, you know, compulsive desire to do your meditation, to do the practice. Obviously, being young monks or in training, there's a lot of things that we need to be doing. You know, you have to learn the chanting. You have to learn, you know, how to sew your robes, do this way, eat in a certain way, walk in a certain way. And so there's a lot of those things that we, you know, a certain part of the practice, you certainly have to take an active interest and to do things. But I think when we come to the practice of samadhi, practice of meditation, we have to start to learn how to leave all that behind and just to be with things. And that sometimes it's not so easy to do, because we are so conditioned to do things. I remember as a young monk, you know, coming from a very active work environment. I used to be a stock analyst, so it's always, you know, reading newspaper all the time, writing reports, meeting clients, calling people. And then I also had a very active social life, you know, doing things, having dinners, parties, and whatever, always doing things, always on the move. Highly, you know, kind of highly energized lifestyle. And when I came to the monastery, obviously I brought those habits with me. So I had this, usually a daily schedule, what I should do, what time I should wake up, so I should just sit and walk, and then what time, you know, how many hours should you devote to chanting, and this and that other stuff. And, you know, in the monastery, you're not supposed to be doing much, but I found myself really being tired as well, just running from one thing after another, doing things all the time. And it's only when I was trained by Ajahn Sungwaro, who's no longer a monk, but he knew my background. So he asked me to do this. He says, you know, do this at least once a day, 5 minutes only. He says, just sit in your kuti and don't do anything. You don't have to meditate. You don't have to watch your breath. You don't have to learn your chanting. Do nothing. And that, I found, was actually very hard. The mind always wants to be doing something. Oh, maybe I should be with my body. Maybe I should be thinking this. Maybe I should think, what should I be doing tomorrow? Maybe I should learn a bit more chanting. And this, yeah, and that's the thing. But after a while, when you get to use the hang of it, it's actually quite nice, quite beautiful just to be with things. Just to watch, you know, the leaves on the tree flutter. Just to be with my tired body. Sometimes I'm quite tired and I didn't notice because I'm always constantly on the move. So just to being with things. Allow the mind to slow down a little bit. And also it allows me to be, you know, more in the present moment, to feel things. Because so many of us, the practice of meditation, the practice of Dhamma, it's on the head. We think about things and it takes a life on its own. And the practice of meditation is an encouragement really to move things downward to the body, to feel things. Deep meditation, as Ajahn Brahm likes to say, is not a thinky thing. It's actually a feely thing. You have to feel your way to deep meditation. And, you know, we've read so many books about, you know, what the jhanas are like, or the different states, you know, the arupa jhanas. And we have a plan of how we're going to get there. You know, I watch my breath, count a few hundred breaths, you know, stabilize it, get my nimittas up, go through the nimittas or whatever. And that's how I get to my jhanas. But anybody who's watched their breath and meditate for any length of time knows that that's not how things work. And they don't work according to our plans. And meditation, and, you know, this is a bit of a digression, but meditation, the reason meditation is so important, you probably know, is that it's just not what we do when we're sitting. Meditation is important because the skills that we need to have good meditations are the same skills that we need to live a fulfilled and full life. It's the ability to be with things, to accept and to embrace. And so, when we sit in meditation, hopefully we are allowing things to open up. They are deep states, and there are wonderful bliss and raptures that we can feel and experience along the way. But those things cannot be reached by grasping, cannot be experienced when we, you know, go reach out for them. It don't happen that way. It happens because we are still, we're open, we're present. And the mind opens up on its own. And that's the thing that we have to remember and remind ourselves. The meditation isn't taking off. What is it that I want? What is it that I'm grasping at? What is it that I'm wishing for, yearning for, or longing for? And we drop that, you know, and then you'll see that the mind opens up and things happen on their own. But with anything, it takes practice, it takes persistence, also takes encouragement, also takes courage just to be with things. Because like I said, it's not something we're used to. We're used to doing life, doing a meditation, and doing the practice. And on a certain level, it's true. Obviously, you have to have a certain desire, craving, to have a peaceful mind, and then to be here. Obviously, to be here, you know, it takes a certain amount of planning. You have family, responsibilities, you have things to do. So then to give up at night, it takes a certain amount of setting your priorities correctly. But also, you know, it is the middle way. So, you know, your craving or your desires takes you to the monastery. But then, that's when we need to learn, to start to let go. You know, whatever desires you had, allow it to be in the monastery, to be in the cushion. And that's great, and that's good. But if we take our desire into the meditation, then it disturbs it. And, you know, it's not peaceful. And that's something each and every one of us can see in our own minds. That it doesn't matter what method you use, whether watching the breath, watching the body, contemplating the truth, if it's done with stillness, it's done with non-grasping, allowing things to be, the mind becomes still on its own. We're patient enough to wait. And that's the thing, you know, reflecting on my own practice for the last, you know, 10, 12 years. I haven't really, like Ajahn Chah, remember, you know, the teachings of Ajahn Chah that I find most useful, or even Lumpu Lim, it's just they're the simple ones. But Lumpu Lim said, you know, practice, you don't need to know a lot, you don't need to read too many books. You just sit and walk, sit and walk, sit and walk, and then you become enlightened. Keep the rules, that's all there is to it. And Ajahn Chah is the same. He said, you know, he obviously experienced many difficulties that you can read for yourself in his biographies and different teachings that he gave. And they always ask, you know, Lumpu, was there anything you did special? Was there anything that you do when you're facing lust or irritation or anger in your mind? And he said, nothing really. He said, basically, it's just patient endurance, being with things. And then they pass away. And in my own practice, basically, I try to follow that, yeah. You know, faith is nice, and faith is, as you know, I feel myself very lucky to be, had the good opportunity to meet many, you know, great monks in our tradition, Lumpu Lim, Ajahn Tan, Ajahn Nan. So inspiration, faith is easy when you had the opportunity to meet, you know, monks who are well attained, who are well practiced. Thinking of them, you know, just settles the mind, just brightens the mind. And so that brings up a lot of energy for the practice. But, you know, that's, you know, only part of the practice. The rest of it is just, you know, sitting and walking and being with all the different states of mind that arises from time to time. And, yeah, so young monk, you know, there's lots of times, literally when, you know, I just sat, basically, with my head in my lap, just very frustrated, confused, because of the different, you know, kind of desires that came up. Lots of, you know, some days you feel so irritated and just kind of hated everything and everybody around me and just had to sit with it. And other days, you know, so much cravings to be somewhere else, to do things. And basically being a monk, and that's the great thing, was there are so many rules around what you cannot do that you had no choice except just to be with these states of mind that arises. And eventually, you know, once you you be with these things and you can experience them fading away, then it gives you a lot of faith. Also, it gives you a lot of wisdom that these things are not permanent. They're not yours. They arise, according, you know, different causes, condition, and then they fade away. And you don't have to do anything. You know? So it's a lot of Dhamma in these things when we have the courage just to be with things. And also, I think once we're not so afraid of the lust that comes up in the mind, once we're not so so carried away with irritations and the anger that comes up in the mind as well, we can learn a lot from these things. We see so much, you know, the teaching of the Buddha on non-self, that, you know, it is something that we cannot control, something that we cannot call our own, because they come and they go when they feel like it, not when we feel like it. Yeah, just kind of encourage people to practice. It is, you know, like the we chant in the morning, evening chanting, you know, the this path of practice. It is beautiful in the beginning, beautiful in the middle, and beautiful in the end. That as we polished, we look after our ethical conduct, we become happier, more. We have more self-confidence. We're not worried about what people might say or do to us, because we know that our intention is pure. And then as the practice comes together, the mind becomes more still. It brings, you know, higher levels of happiness that we never, you know, thought possible. And for myself, anyway, along the way, just, you know, meeting great monks and practitioners. So if nothing else happened in my practice, just having the opportunity, you know, to meet great monks like Ajahn Tan, and just to be around them, is in itself a great blessing. So sometimes there's a lot of worry, yes, you know, or, you know, am I going to be a stream enterer this lifetime or not? Or am I going to finish the practice? Yeah, I mean, that's so kind of out there in the future. It's so uncertain. We can bring back to the present moment. We can bring back, you know, to reflect on our goodness. It doesn't matter what the future brings, whether the suffering will stop or not, but the fact that we have good opportunities to practice in this day and age, in America, you know, in the U.S., in the West, where it's not a native, you know, religion. We have the good opportunity to be with great people who are going the same direction. That in itself is a huge blessing. When you step out of this monastery, you can appreciate, you know, what the world is up to. And sometimes it's good to reflect on these things from time to time, to still the mind. And then we can take those deeper into a practice of meditation, of letting things be, allowing things to come and grow, at, you know, to go at their own accord. But it is a practice of introspection, of knowing what's happening. First off, is to rejoice in the Sangha who's growing, practice in peace and harmony together. Hopefully build upon that strength to still the mind and to see the truth for yourself. I mean, the highest act of respect that you can pay to the teacher, to the Buddha, is to take the teachings into your own practice and to make it work for yourself. That's the thing, is, you know, when you read the Dhamma in the books, it's one thing. Obviously, it's helpful, it's clear, but, you know, it's also from that person's perspective. And what each and every one of us have to do when we read this book is to, you know, to work with these teachings, to work with these truths, so that they become our own. You know, what is lust or anger feels in our own mind? And what is stillness feels like when we become still? It's so much more than it's in the books. But it's something only each and every one of us can do for ourselves. So it's great to have a harmonious sangha, to be with each other, to help each other along the way. But I think for each and every one of our practice, the most important bit of the monastic life is the moments when we're in our own kutis, watching our breath and watching our own mind. Those are the times when we get to know what this body and mind of ours is like. So the monastic has many different levels. Our mind has many different kind of moods and feelings. Like Ajahn Pasna was saying the other day. It's like, you know, it's not one person that's in the mind. It's not one Kemawaro. It's a whole committee in the sign. And they don't always agree in which direction we should go. So in the beginning, I was a bit worried about that. You know, obviously, you have the very dark side, the shadow side that people all talk about. And you always want to identify with our positive qualities. I'm the peaceful one, the nice one. Well, there's not so peaceful one in the mind. And a not so nice person, or nice moods in the mind from time to time. And the thing is to have enough stillness and the faith to allow these things to come up. Not to own them, but to acknowledge that they're there and to work with them. It is only through working with them that we can, you know, come to understand and to let them go. Because ultimately, we'll hold on to things we do not understand, cannot face, we don't understand. And that's the thing that hopefully, with more stillness and wisdom, that we can work through. Just growing up in the West, in LA, there was this little show that I used to see every Saturday. It was Casey Kasem, Top 40. And he always ends the show with, you know, keep reaching for the stars, but keep your feet on the ground. So I like to end the Dhamma talk as well. Keep reaching for Nirvana, but yes, keep your feet firmly planted on the ground in the present moment. So I offer that for my reflection tonight.